Hey everyone, welcome to the Earned 5-Star Podcast on the Fans First Sports Network. I'm your host, Joshua Voles, site manager, emperor, supreme warlord, and defender of the faith over at onefootdown.com. And joining me tonight, per usual, is the commissioner, Jude Seymour, and the chief inspector, Brendan McElinden. Fellas, I changed my mind about Menards.
Oh.
Yeah, are you getting that 11%?
No. Well, yeah, that's fantastic. No. I had a rare day the other day where I had to go to Menards, Lowe's, and Home Depot. And if you were power ranking the three right now, it's Menards, Lowe's, and Home Depot in that order. Home Depot can go to hell, sir. Go to hell with their ridiculously stupid floor outline. There should, it's stupid in there. Dumb. Can't find a damn thing. Things are not where they're supposed to be at. Angry. Angry, Josh. Angry Emperor was just stomping through the halls. What was that? I don't know. I can't remember if that was Friday or Saturday. I think it was Friday. God, I was pissed.
So is Menards, like, do they have as big of stores as Home Depot and Lowe's?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. They're all food, too, Jude.
What's that? We don't have Menards. We have they sell food? Oh, okay.
They sell food, man. And I'll tell you what, they do a good job of putting some fun stuff in there. In fact, I can't remember the name of it, but the good-ass licorice that everybody loves, the Australian shit.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. The Wallaby. That's where I first found it, was at Menards. I got like this, I'm not shitting you, dude. It was like a 10-gallon bucket.
I think Tyler James was the one who turned me on to that and said that that was super good, and I got some, and I was like, but I found that, funny enough, at my local Ace Hardware.
Yeah, dude, I don't know why it's not like in a gourmet, like that should be like at a K Jewelers or some shit like that. That's how good that is.
Yeah.
I mean it's the best licorice you could get, hands down. So yeah, I'm still remodeling the kitchen. I mean, I thought about recording this podcast while I was working on the kitchen, but I really didn't want the reviews being like, what the hell was all that noise?
Josh couldn't stop banging.
Yeah. No, I'm at the smoothing out phase, pretty much. I'm so close, guys. I'm so close. Maybe by April.
Yeah, you still getting that fresco put in?
No, I'm not getting the fresco put in.
Why aren't you getting a fresco put in?
I don't know.
Did the wife say no to a fresco? Why aren't you commissioning a fresco?
Is there somewhere in your kitchen for a fount for a water for a whole?
Yeah, where's the fountain? Obviously, well, you have the outdoor trellises.
Yeah, we got the whatchamacallit right when you walk in the doorway.
Yeah, but you know the empire is expanding, right? So.
Right. No, I don't have a fountain. Although I think if we did, maybe it would last a little longer. But I'd have to have Father come over and take care of that. Like I mean, how does that work? Like if I take like a vial of holy water and dump that into like 5 gallons of water, does that turn it all into holy water then? Right?
I think if the priest comes over and blesses it, then be all becomes holy water, right?
Well, I mean, wouldn't just say 5 ounces of holy water. If I dump that into 5 gallons, doesn't it make it all holy water?
Like by association, I don't know the rules. I don't know the rules. So if there's any priests that are listening to the Earn 5-Star podcast, if they want to weigh in and a review, that we'd appreciate that. Just like the fellow who jumped on our Twitter mentions to talk about the DOT numbers on the.
Oh yeah, in the reviews tonight too. I got people wanting to mansplain some other stuff to us too.
Ooh.
So people are more than willing to share their information when they think you're wrong.
Is it well, actually, guys, or you are technically correct, the best kind of correct, guys?
No. It definitely is a well, actually.
Oh, nice. Okay, perfect.
Oh shit. So if you caught it for the intro, or if you're staring at a very generic piece of artwork, going, what the hell podcast is this on your feed? Number one, Brendan is late on his assignment. Number two, we finally did the network move. Like we said, it shouldn't affect you guys at all. This will be on that feed. So it's almost like we don't need to mention it other than that's why the intro said something different. And that's it.
And
that's
all I really got to say. That intro, right? It was a one take intro.
No. Because this is the spot. So what do we pride ourselves in this podcast? Like the fact that we don't like practice things, right? Like we don't really have a script. We never have had a script, not even close to one. Barely a rundown on some shows. And you know, we just kind of wing this shit. And it is what it is. But I did practice the intro because I'm just so used to saying it a certain way after what, 300 shows or whatever the hell it's been. So I practiced it a couple times. Like, oh man, that was smooth delivery. And what do you know? Right off the bat, strike. Just absolutely whiffed on the first take. But this was the second take. So I didn't end up striking out. So nailed it. There's podcasts out there. They'll practice their commercial breaks. Like, fuck that. That's much work.
Practice the commercial breaks. That's good.
They do.
I love it.
They do. They will literally, man, they will take notes. I don't even know what that is. That's sounds like work to me, fellas. I'm dealing with that. But this is the Earned 5-Star Podcast now. It didn't take long for us to come up with a new name. This was the name we kind of all threw out at this around the same time. And despite there being other options that we offered after that, this was the one that was going to stick. So hopefully it works. My wife is not a fan.
Oh, really?
No, she was not a fan of it.
But she doesn't know the recurring bit, though, right?
That's why I yelled at her. Okay. And that's why I'm not – she hasn't talked to me. I'm like, so you obviously don't listen to the fucking show then, because if you did, you'd understand why that was the name. And people that listen to the show get it. I don't even think – so she didn't. She didn't get it. All right. Well, speaking of earned five stars, I can't even do the bit right. Asking Brendan what kind of reviews we're looking for. Obviously, we're looking for some earned 5-star reviews. Just a reminder, everybody, get on over to Apple Podcasts, leave a rating, leave a review. Any review that you leave, we will read word for word on the next episode.
You almost said it again.
I didn't, though. It's going to be a rough 3 years.
It'll happen.
It'll be there.
It'll be there.
Yes, we are looking for those earned 5 stars, just like the title of the podcast. This, honestly, there couldn't have been a better title for the podcast, because really what's made this show has been, you know, I'd say 70% us, 30% you, because just the direction that the reviews have gone. Because we have made a commitment to reading all these. You have become a part of the show. You are the fourth host in this podcast. You know, there's some shit that's said on these things that can change the trajectory of the entire show. It has created little storylines within storylines. So we appreciate that, and that's kind of a special shout out to all of you as the fourth host there. So let's get to it. I got one here from Emu for Life. He says, Frederick, 5 stars. Fredericks of Hollywood. Fellas, Derek May's 5-star review. We all know we were sneaking into Fredericks of Hollywood and trying not to get caught. Well, at least I was. This obviously goes back to our mall.
Yeah.
Our mall thing. He says, in all honesty, loved hanging inside Spencer's. And the arcade tilt weekly, and spent way too much of my parents' money trying to win all those tickets on the token game. Our mall looks like a scene from The Walking Dead in recent years, which is sad. Also, Briarwood, I worked there for years at Sunglass Hut inside the Macy's while attending Emu. Lastly, I have a question for you guys. Favorite building on Emu's campus? And also, did you ever fancy TC Speakeasy while at Emu? Appreciate you, Dave in Michigan.
Which building, man?
Fuck.
The brick deck.
Whichever building the classes weren't in, apparently.
Are you telling me you went to this fine establishment for 4 years of your life and you can't name a single building you like?
I like the student center because it's the only one that I know, and they were the only place in the state that had a Chick-fil-A for like 5 years.
For a long time. I mean, the Brick Dick stands out. I don't really know if that really counts as campus, though, but I mean, no, it's right next to campus. Yeah. But I mean, honestly, all right, so like Prairie Herald was where most of your classes are at your first couple years. So obviously not that one. Fuck that. Emu's got underground tunnels from their dorms to the academic buildings, which is bullshit.
Oh, really? Interesting.
I mean, you will show up in shorts and flip-flops in 20-degree weather.
I did that, and we didn't have underground tunnels.
Right, that's what I'm saying. Well,
are those dodgy places to be on a Friday night at 2 o'clock in the morning? Or
Tunnels below campus? Of course not, Jude.
No. Listen.
It sounds very rapey.
The tunnels below campus in Ypsilanti, Michigan? No.
Jude, on campus on Friday night, I wouldn't even know. I could probably count on one hand how many times that happened. It's usually the off campus somewhere else.
Yeah. There's no like on campus bar or anything, right?
Well, I mean, they're just all right on the outside. The Wood Nickel, fucking Theo's. I don't know what this TK Speakeasy is. That doesn't ring a bell to me at all. Tower Inn. So I mean, I can't remember how old Dave said he was, but that might have been after my time. Theo's is gone. The Wooden Nickel looks like a bomb shelter right now. I took the boys by it, and it was just like I spent a lot of time here with a really good fake ID. So I don't know. I liked my dorm room. I liked our dorm hall. Wise Hall, it was by itself. It was a co-ed dorm. Downing was an all-girls dorm. Buell was like upperclassmen. But there was like across from Wise was like was much bigger, like Phelps and Phillips and all these other halls. It was just a whole different. It was the hood, man. You never knew what the fuck was going to go on. Shit got wild outside. Obviously, Wise Hall, if I haven't mentioned before the podcast, the dorm I had my freshman year, we had a drive-by shooting there. And I forgot about that. And when I took the boys up to drive past it just this fall, I forgot all about that. It had been a while since I've been over there. They completely blocked that road off there now. So you can't do the drive-bys like you used to in that spot. So that's all bermed out. You can't, which is kind of wild. So I don't know. Favorite building? I mean, I'll go with the Brick Dick because it stands for everything I believe in up there. But whatever. Eastern is not it. MAC campuses are not beautiful campuses. Like Miami of Ohio is gorgeous, but they're not really a MAC school, and they certainly try to portray themselves as not one either. But Eastern, Central, Ball State, Northern Illinois, fucking Kent State, Akron, all these campuses look the same. So
we didn't have a Fredericks of Hollywood in any mall that I grace with regularity. I'm certainly aware of it. I've certainly seen it before. Their stuff was always so like
way racier than Victoria's Secret.
I was going to say just so like. You know, you were in there. You there wasn't any plausible deniability. You know, like Victoria's Secret, you could be like, I'm just, you know, sweatpants or something. You know what I mean? Like you could, you know, do anything. But Fredericks of Hollywood, I mean, you were in there to buy lingerie. So
I'm still uncomfortable shopping in Victoria's Secret, like actually going in. I still don't like it.
Well, I mean, and also you have a daughter. I would just like, I would 100% ever do that. So,
right. I'm just saying, it's just like, I don't like going in there because it's, you just get looked at funny. Like, God damn it. I'm here to buy, but well, no. So there was this one time I went in there and I was Christmas shopping and they had like a panty sale, right? And so I bought like, and I had my sister-in-law to buy for Christmas and like in the family drawing. So it was a good sale. So I bought my wife like 20 pairs of panties and my sister-in-law like 20 pairs of panties, but they're different sizes. And when I took it up to the counter, I wasn't thinking anything of it. Who gives a shit what I got there, right? But the cashier, she made a point to point out, like, she goes, you realize you have two different sizes here, right? I said, yeah. She's like, and she kind of looked at me. I'm like, they're for two different people. And then she gave me a fucking shitty look.
That doesn't make it better. That doesn't make it better. Like,
Josh, you're not helping yourself here.
What is that? I mean, I was given the gift I was told to give. Someone said they wanted panties. So, but anyways, the shitty ass look I got.
I just like, I can't even imagine like your sister-in-law being like, and now I'm going to put on the panties that my brother-in-law bought me. Like, that's a weird fucking weird. That's a weird vibe right there.
Yeah, I'm not even going to go there.
Well, I think that was part of the reason why I enjoyed it so much. Cause I thought it was a funny thing to do.
Yikes.
But I did not appreciate getting looked at like I was a monster for having two different sizes up there. It was bullshit.
That's so funny. You made your own bet on that one.
I did. So next one here. Says Joe don't swim to his women. Joe don't swim after his girls. 5 stars. I don't know what that means. 5 stars. Guys, first, the endowment sheds a percentage each year to a school. Larger endowment equals larger annual amount. Next, when we're taking on fundraising, both major campaigns and or construction, neither gets publicly announced until 70-75% has already been committed to said project. So if Crossroads is $700 million, you could bet they had $500 already, leaving the relatively smaller amount to be crowdsourced. Lastly, come on. None of you understand tuition? Yes, ND gives out financial aid, but why would it lower tuition? Do you know how many full pay families there are and how much money would be left on the kitchen table? The secret is the full pay kids funds the financial aid kid when it's all said and done. You don't need the Mendoza school to solve this. You need to get your collective awareness above the Mendoza line. Still enjoying the podcast, but we'll admit that the swearing really should be beneath you all at this stage of your life. Think of it this way. The language is more BVG than B-Basin. Maybe aspire for better? Let's call the pod a 5-star, but playing on a tweaked linguistic hammy. What the fuck is this shit? First of all, when did we ever talk about tuition?
We said that they need to, the Mendoza school, we need to figure out how to get NIL to a place where we're not behind the eight ball.
Okay.
Where other schools and other programs are able to play big boy recruiting games and we're still playing footsie hoping that our
right.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I did not know they took an annual cut out of the endowment each year, but I will tell you this much. It's not going towards anything towards the athletics. At least we're not seeing it. Because if you got what's the endowment now? How many billions?
They're the second highest endowment. Yeah. So
at any rate,
I guess my point is have you seen, I got sent videos and pictures of the new Auburn players' locker room.
Oh, they're fresh.
They're fresh. Have you seen, obviously there's the LSU locker room. Right. Obviously, there's Alabama's locker room, which is immaculate. Alabama just built an entire NIL building.
Clemson is building theirs.
Clemson's building theirs. Clemson also has, what, the Lazy River and the Slide?
Mm-hmm.
So why does Notre Dame not have Spartan locker rooms? if this money is going to the football program in order to better it, why isn't the proof in the pudding? Why does Notre Dame look like an above average but not an elite program?
It's the same reason the Fozzer Hatsburg didn't want to pose for with a football on the cover of Time magazine. They don't want to be seen too much as a football school, right? And so anything you do to draw attention to the football program like that, that's extraneous, that reminds people that you have money that you literally have to set on fire instead of paying players, they don't want to do.
Which is dumb because you have money and everybody knows you have money.
Absolutely.
And then you get made fun of when you don't spend it.
But exactly. But once again, Notre Dame is outsmarting itself, right? Which is they're like, we don't want to draw any attention to the fact that we're sitting on a pile of money because we believe in the amateurism model. And we also don't want it to seem like we're putting more resources into football than we are into academics. So we're not going to build a cool slide or a lazy river or anything else or the state-of-the-art locker rooms.
And we're the locker room is the one that you know, everything else is like is what it is. The locker room one for me is the one that's the most bullshit. Like,
I mean, the locker room's fine. The locker room's nice. It's just
it's okay.
It's above average, but it's not elite.
Not even close. Not even remotely close. Yeah. But my problem is that because they did it, that was part of the Crossroads part, right? When they redid all that shit.
Yep.
When do you guys think the next time they're going to revamp the locker room is going to be?
2042.
That's my point. These other schools that have that their locker rooms are already like head and shoulders above Notre Dame's will have already have revamped theirs one or two more times before Notre Dame does. And that's just based off of history. Maybe Notre Dame changes.
But you know what?
Josh, changes slow there.
Flashy locker rooms are for people that can't pass Spanish. Okay. You want a flashy locker room? Just stuck at a foreign language and miss out on the requirement, right?
You know, that foreign language thing has been a point we have brought on this podcast.
I mean, this is TJ Duckett just 20 years later, right?
Yeah, this is pretty much. I mean, Mitten State, one way or another. I honestly didn't know about the cut for the endowment, whatever. I did know about how the projects are work. That's not a big fucking deal. I get all that. I still think that you got money to burn or go out and make more money. I mean, that's part of the point of it. But
hey, you win a national title. You know how much money you'd make?
Who would know? I mean, they would still be making the $4 million a year off of NBC instead of Indiana making like 90 off of their deal. As far as this whole thing about the swearing, like, are we really going after this again? At my stage in my dude, at the stage in my life as a man about to be 45 years old here in a few months, I don't give a fuck. I give zero fucks about that.
It's like asked and answered, right? In a court of law, right? Like we've beaten this particular horse to death. I think we've been pretty honest about who we are, and for some people that's the charm, and for some people that's the turnoff. And there's some nights where there's some pods where I don't swear at all, but it's not conscious. That's just the language I use. Right. And sometimes I'm fired up and I drop one, you know, or drop four. I don't know.
I don't swear at all in front of my children. So I don't swear at all during the day. So I save up all my good swears for the evening when I'm on the podcast.
No, I don't.
I do feel like it puts a nice punctuation on certain points that you're trying to make, you know? So
definitely. Swear in front of the kids. No, they hear it. I'm Italian. I don't know how else they're going to get around it. And how are they going to know how to use it correctly in the real world if they don't hear their dad saying it? I mean,
I try to use it as a learning experience, right? Which is like, you know, I want them to be aware of what the words are and what words we expect them not to say in their schools, in public, you know, but they're also going to hear them around the house because it's just, that's who me and their mother is, you know? So
I also watch a lot of Quentin Tarantino films. I mean, I'm not taking the children to go see it. So I'm not sure where you like outgrow it. But there's some cusses in Mr. Tarantino's work as well.
Wu-Tang is for the children. And if you think I haven't listened to Wu-Tang with the kids in the car, you're fucking crazy. But no, I actually read an article about how it was in your house, the language used inside your home should be free and without condemnation, like from parents to children, so that they know when it's proper to say things and when it's not proper to say things.
I mean, my 8-year-old asked me yesterday, is dang it okay to say? And I was like, yeah, buddy, go for it. Dang it's fine. You know what I mean? Just, like, I think it's incredibly
cute.
I think he's incredibly cute when he's like, ah, dang it. Like,
yeah. I mean, if I even get an actual word out of Dylan when he gets pissed in public, who knows? He just turns angry face and punches something. So I would rather him just yell fuck than maybe, I don't know, throw a lamp down.
And then process it from there. So,
yeah, I don't know. It's just the whole language thing. We've explained this since day one. If you were sitting with us in a bar, you're getting the unpolished version of who we are. That's just what it is. So,
yeah.
I'm sorry, but I'm not. So,
I mean, I think I treat this well. I feel like I treat very similar. Like if my kids have questions, like, what did my son say the other day about, he's like, oh, there's a new hot dog place that opened up. And he's like too hot.
It's called
two hot dogs. And he's like, he started laughing. I said, what's so funny? And he said, hot dogs, just another word for penis. And I was like, well, I think you mean wiener, but yeah.
Like, you got to go through like the triple wordplay association to get
it. And he was just like, he just thought it was just so funny that somebody would name their place two hot dogs. Like, I don't know, man. I think they're pretty much, he's like, and so after Taekwondo, he's like, can we go to the hot dog place? And I was like, you just think it's funny? And he's like, I don't know. I'm kind of in the mood for a hot dog. I'm like, well, we ate already, buddy, but maybe some other time, you know? So.
Oh, shit. All right. Well, yeah.
Like my parents, I don't know about you guys, but my parents never talked to me about sex. They never talked to me about
anything. I never once got the talk.
No.
And
never.
My parents watched their P's and Q's about swearing in front of me, and it didn't turn me into any less of a swear, you know? So.
No, my parents, my father, who was not a man of many words, and the words he did use, this reviewer probably wouldn't like. very much. No, my dad never pulled any punches for the words he used. It was what it was, but at least he knew what he was saying. Wasn't belligerent about it. Yeah, I mean, there are certain people out there in the world that talking to them that I am uncomfortable listening to them because every other word out of their mouth is fucking this, fucking that. And they're not doing it like angrily. Like I get so pissed sometimes that I'm just like trying to vent to my wife and every other word feels like it's a fuck or fucking, you know, but there's just like random people you're talking to, like at a high school basketball game, and every other word out of their mouth is fucking. And it's like, damn, man, maybe think of a new adjective. I don't know.
Yeah. That is funny that like, I'm sensitive to that too. Like, I think it was the movie Step Brothers. There was just so many swears in it. I was like, I really feel like they could find a new word here, you know?
Yeah. I'm speaking on a whole nother level. Like I'm talking like Ohio hillbilly style level where every other word and basically one out of every, or I'd say probably 7 out of every 10 adjectives for a noun is fucking. Fucking Wall Street Journal fucking the other day fucking came over here and fucking did this.
That's not
exaggerating.
I think that means that if you, any word you would overuse, right? Like if somebody said the word awesome every third word, you'd just be like, just the word awesome is not that awesome. So you got to really find something different. So
yeah, if I'm on that level, I really drank way too much. Like, I drank way, way too much. Please call my wife and have her come pick me up.
I do think I do think it's very funny that every time somebody complains about the amount of swearing, I think the swearing goes up way more. So it's almost like don't call attention to it, you know?
Well, it's almost like, let me explain to you why I use the word shit. Let me explain to you why I use the word fuck. All right, moving on here. This is going to be a hard review to read because there was not a lot of – there wasn't a whole lot of punctuation. And it doesn't make any sense. At all.
So it's like sort of like Paul's letters to the Corinthians.
There's like 7 questions in here too, mixed in with
You should start with brothers and sisters and then never stop. Just like, just run out of breath.
Paul really was an asshole, by the way.
He just hated punctuation, I think. So,
All right. This is from Nikki B, Southwest Michigan. Goat, and then it's got the purple devil.
Oh.
So, okay. I don't know. Yeah, so I don't know. It says Jeff Burris. This is 5 stars. Jeff Burris lining up in the power T for a touchdown. 5 stars. Love the pod. Y'all are top tier. Love the banter and the nicknames. I subscribe to all other ND football podcasts, and they are all trash. Just put out more. They just put out more content than you guys. So I want your guys' professional opinion on what I'm about to ask. Was Rick Meyer better, really, than Kevin McDougal?
Yes.
Yes.
I'm not mistaken. He wasn't the second string ever in Notre Dame history. Yeah, Kevin. Rick Meyer was fucking incredible.
That's incredible. What makes the legend, quote unquote. And we talked about this actually in the DMs the other day. I brought up the fact that Lou Holtz wasted years at Notre Dame. Only winning that one title. He should have won a national title with Rick Meyer.
This got brought up on the site when Hayden dropped the Mike Bray is a villain. Is Mike Bray a villain article? And everyone got pissed at the word villain. And someone said, someone brought up Holtz in the comments. Like, would you call Holtz a villain? Like, I fucking absolutely would call Holtz a villain. Are you kidding? Because we had just got done talking about that in the DMs too, a little bit. The amount of talent wasted in those kind of mid years of Holtz's tenure was incredible.
He should have won a title at some point between. I mean, he should have won a consensus title, I should say, Joshua, at some point before he left Notre Dame.
Yeah, he's got two non-consensus in 89 and 93.
Right. And I mean, maybe I'm crazy, but you needed
the 91 team. Oh my God.
The 91 team should have won a title.
And
right?
It was easier then than it is now.
Hey, amen.
Like so much easier then than it is now. And Notre Dame got had such an upper hand then than they do now.
The 92 team should have won a title. If you didn't shit the bed against Stanford, and by shit the bed, I mean lose by double digits to Stanford at home, you probably would have won the national title in 92. Right? Because they went 10-1-1. And the eventual national title champion was Alabama. And I mean, you probably would have played Alabama instead of Texas A&M, and you beat number 4 Texas A&M.
I don't know
that Alabama team that year though
was fucking good.
Yeah,
they were good. I mean, like, you would have had a shot at them.
Really? No, you would have definitely had a shot at them. But man, those guys were really. Gene Stallings had them boys clicking.
That was the George Teague year, right?
Yeah, George Teague, Copeland.
Yeah.
I mean, that was a tough ass Alabama team for sure. God, who was their quarterback that year?
Was it Chad Key? No. It was Jay Barker. No, Jay Barker? Was that their quarterback?
I want to say it's Jay Barker, but for some reason I keep thinking Jay Barker is a lot younger person.
Yeah, it's Jay Barker was their quarterback, and you would have beaten that Alabama team with Jay Barker at quarterback. You would have beat him. You had the better quarterback. You had better running backs. You had the better team.
Yeah, Rick Meyer got wasted. I mean, honestly, I don't know that talent got. I know it's unpopular for us to sit here and say it, and I think us three had kind of have the same mindset about it. But Holtz is a little overrated. Holtz is Dan Devine. Everyone puts Holtz up in this big pedestal. Well, he did no more than Dan Devine did, honestly.
Yeah,
well, he would start rattling off other years.
The other thing is that Holtz will be the first person to tell you that there was a certain sense of complacency that came in after 88, and that,
yes,
you know, he needed to have more of a killer instinct, like a Nick Saban, like one is not enough, you know? Whereas I think that they spent so much effort climbing the mountaintop that once they got there, they were a little bit more.
And in his defense too, honestly, as far as the consensus titles go, they got absolutely got completely fucked in 93.
Of course.
No denying that.
You know, there was just some missed opportunities that were completely out of loose hand there. 93, that was one. The Phantom clip was another year.
Yep.
I mean, Holtz has a legitimate gripe for the amount of,
even the Phantom clip, you're still a two loss team that shit the bed against Stanford once again.
Yeah.
You would have been one loss.
No, cause they lost to Penn State too that year. Phantom clip year, right?
Were they four going into that?
I mean, probably, but they were five. They were five going into that game, but they had two losses.
And that was the number one team in the country. But back then, the number five team could beat the number one team in a bowl game, and you had some hope because people could see football with their eyeballs.
Yeah, but Georgia Tech went 11-0-1, so that Georgia Tech then would have been kept Georgia Tech from a title.
No, I get it.
Did Georgia Tech get a claim to
me? 93 was the most atrocious.
Yeah, Georgia Tech won the coaches' poll, so it was a split title.
So, I mean, and Holtz is right. You know, if you're not going to give it to Notre Dame in 89 because of Miami, then how do you not give it to Notre Dame in 93? Like, they use the opposite argument against them, you know. So, but at any rate, You put the doubt in mind when you had the best talent in the country. So by, you know, shitting the bed against these teams, you should have lost. People like jump on Brian Kelly for, you know, losing some of these games that he's lost. Just go back in the Holtz era and look at some of the losses that Notre Dame had during the Holtz era.
Yeah, it's not really comparable, though. I mean, Holtz only lost one time to a team under 500. Kelly did that multiple times.
And no, I mean, Holtz was a great team.
Right, but I'm talking about when they bring up just specifically big game losses, like our big Alabama losing Oklahoma in South Bend, like those type of things. They want to harp on it, but we're doing that shit. Did we beat Ohio State? No, lost two games of that. Stanford was at the end, right? Not a reason.
Yeah, Holtz, I mean, we're talking 95, 96, right?
Yeah, that's at the end.
Holtz,
I mean,
Holtz,
I get it.
I think Holtz stands up much better than Kelly, but
no. Without question, he does. I mean, that's not. I wasn't trying to make that argument. I'm just saying it's not so far away. Like the legend of Lou Holtz keeps growing, right? Everything he does, fans.
The further we go from 88,
actually, to be honest with you, I think that Lou Holtz has done more harm to his own standing. In the last, what would you say, probably 6 or 7 years than he ever did during any of the under the tarnished dome kind of era or whatever, right? So
well, yeah, because I mean, once you start throwing personal political beliefs out there that people don't agree with, they don't give a shit how many games you won.
And then remember, he went to the Chad Tough, some sort of Michigan, was it signing day or something like that? And they talked about how great Michigan degree was and stuff.
You were big hating on that.
You should. You don't go to the – and that was Jim Harbaugh's big signing.
I literally wrote an article where they got Rashawn Gary. Saying, the top five reasons Lou Holtz is dead to me.
Yeah. Like, yeah. And that's a big one for sure. I mean, why wouldn't it be? All right. Continuing whole, on,
like, Brian Kelly. I wrote Brian Kelly letters, and he never wrote me back. Like, just that's just please. You're better than that. Stop doing that.
Yeah, and honestly, even before the decision to go public about his very conservative, uber conservative political beliefs, people were already hating on him, Notre Dame fans, because of the fucking sideshow that he created on ESPN with Mark May.
Yeah.
And just like Notre Dame was not a good football program and they were struggling. And yet you kept putting them out there. You kept teeing it up for everyone to fucking just knock them out of the park. Like it was, I mean, if you take Lou Holtz out of that, out of that equation during the during that time, the amount of Notre Dame jokes probably decreases by 75%. Because they just were put out there like a bunch of fucking lambs to slaughter every week. So, anyways.
Plus, he probably isn't nearly as popular as Mark May was because he was an outstanding foil to Lou Holtz.
He was a professional wrestler in that role. I mean, that was like listening
he had a role and he played it perfectly.
That was like listening to JR or who was that? Like Bobby the Brain Heenan and who's the one? The cowboy Ross.
Yep, Jim Ross.
I get. Yeah, Jim Ross. Like it's just like that. Moving on. All right, he's got some more here. Who would you rather have? Lee Becton, Autry Denson, or Julius Jones?
Julius Jones for one game.
Brendan's married, and it could be arguably Julius Jones.
So I guess the question here is for the career Autry Denson, for the talent Becton, for the game, Jones.
Oh, Julius Jones was like
the most. Jones is the most talented of the three.
I was gonna say when he was on, he was probably the most talented, right?
Yeah, he's most talented. I mean, listen, Lee Becton. Not even Lee Becton is surprised at the career Lee Becton had. there wasn't a better screen runner in the history of Notre Dame than Lee Becton. But I mean, I think without question, the better, like the most skilled running back of those three was Julius Jones. Denson had a hell of a career. Jones could have had a Denson type career. But also had
missed a year.
Had some issues. So, I mean,
Autry Denson for me is. I mean, first of all, Brendan I know loves him because of the 23 action, right? But
he was my first real favorite Notre Dame football player.
Yeah, I mean, it just absolute joy during my undergrad years to watch week in week out, and he just became sort of the gold standard. And I grew up watching Becton, certainly. I appreciate the hell out of what Becton did, but I'm kind of more like with Josh, which is like Lee Becton is surprised at how well Lee Becton went, you know, and did. Yeah. And I think also I hold Denson in high esteem because of what he did as running backs coach here too. I can't separate the player from the
coach. Amazing coach. Shitty recruiter, amazing coach.
Yeah. Julius Jones has a four-game career.
But also, Autry Denson is of a different world. Like, are you ever going to have a four-year starter at running back?
No.
Probably not. I mean, when's the last time you had a four-year starter running back at any big-time program?
I don't know. How long did Mike Hart at Michigan?
I mean,
Hart was a four-year starter at Michigan.
That might be right. What about, so what's Corum working on? Speaking of Michigan,
second year. So it'd be his third year.
Okay.
Yeah.
But again,
Mike Hart was a four-year starter. He was a starter in 04, 05, 06, and 07.
I mean, Darius Walker could have been that four-year starter.
He could have.
Could have been. That senior year would have been hurtful.
Julius Jones ran for 262 famously against Pitt, 221 against Navy, 161 against BYU, 218 against Stanford. And those four games are higher than like the rest of his career, essentially.
Which is fine. Like I said, I'm just out of pure talent alone. I mean, Jones also had a better NFL career than the other two.
He did.
Special teams wise had a better career in college as a special teams player than those do. I just out of pure talent alone, if you were to draft those three in front of me, I'd take Jones.
Was Le'Veon Bell a 4-year starter? I feel because no. he had an enormous amount of rush attempts. He was a 3-year starter. He was a three-year starter with 671 rush attempts. Holy Jesus.
If it Well, they learned their lesson from not giving the ball to J.U. Kolarik enough.
He had, back in the mid-2000s. 382 rush attempts in 2012. Good God.
Continuing, because he's not done yet. Ray Zellers, Mark Edwards, or Rashawn Powers-Neal?
I mean, Mark Edwards, right?
Mark Edwards, yeah. Dude had a two-game stretch, I think it was his senior year, against BC and USC. I think he scored like six or seven touchdowns. Dude, it was incredible. I think against Boston College, he had he scored a touchdown like every third. I don't know. I did a story on it about the fullbacks and that, but like just going back to that two-game stretch and that BC game, it's just fucking incredible. I mean, Mark Edwards was a perfect time, perfect offense for him. I liked Rashawn Powers-Neal a lot. And it was a shame that he missed out on the rest of the 05 season, because I think Charlie Weiss really had a lot. Like the USC game, everyone brings up, you know, all sorts of things going on, like Bush push and all that shit. But there was a pass dropped. Was it by Schwab? If you put Rashawn Powers-Neal in that space, I think maybe it was Schwab's freshman year. But anyways, I like Rashawn Powers-Neal a lot. I like Ray Zellers a lot too. He's got one of the greatest runs you ever watch against Purdue, when he was just smoke. Oh God, he just smoked the fool and kept going. But I think Mark Edwards hands down wins that one. I'm not sure. I mean, the only other fullback in Notre Dame recent memory that you could be put up would be probably Bettis. That you could say would be better than Edwards, right?
Yeah, I mean, are we counting Audric Esme as a fullback?
Yeah, I mean, you have to. I mean, still, not even close. I mean, and Mark Edwards, where's he from?
There it is.
Ohio.
There it is.
Ohio. So it's not close.
I was just thinking of all the Stanford backs. Like, Toby Gerhart must have been a four-year back, right?
I don't know.
You know what? I think Toby Gerhart was, and he played on some awful.
Oh, you know who? You know who was a four-year guy? LT, LaDainian Tomlinson at TCU. He was a four-year dude.
Yeah, okay. And see, but I don't think Gerhart.
Gerhart was not, because his 2007 season, he only played one game. But he started his freshman year. He started in 2008, and he started 2009.
Okay. Yeah, Denson was a starter for four straight years. I mean, his freshman year, he had a little more shared time, and I think we had a pretty decent stable of backs that year too. I mean, didn't we still have Kinder and Farmer and those guys his freshman year, I believe?
He had 137 carries his freshman year. So I don't know if 137 is starter, but that's a pretty good amount of carries, right?
That's hell yeah, it is. It's more than
95 season. Kinder carried it 143, Edwards 140, and Denson was 137. So I mean, that's 1A, 1B. He was 1B to Kinder's 1A.
That's funny. I always bring up Farmer like he got more carries than he did, and he didn't. Like, for some reason, he sticks out to me. But he had, I don't know, he didn't have that as many carries as my memory would lead me to believe. It keeps going here. Is the flank position the same as the slot? Yes. We don't need to talk about that. All-time starting wide receiver group going five wide. Who's the most prolific? Oh, Jesus. He's got a ton in here. So all-time starting wide receiver group going five wide. Five wide receivers. Let's do this collectively, boys.
Tim Brown.
Five best wide receivers.
Tim Brown. Golden Tate.
Matt Salerno.
Shut up.
Chris Fink.
Oh, no. Okay.
Chris Shelton.
God. They're all the same.
Matt Shelton. Yeah.
They're all the same.
What I don't know, man.
So I don't know. Tim Brown, Michael Floyd, Golden Tate, Jeff Samardzija.
Those are all really good answers.
Dude, I need a fifth. Derek Mays.
No.
Derek Mays was clutch.
Yeah, clutch, but I mean, like.
I mean, look, I like Snowball a lot, too. Like, I would throw, you know, Snowball's numbers would have been more if Samardzija wasn't so damn good.
Can we pick, no, I have the fifth one. Ew. The legend of the practice player that is Kevin Austin.
The legend of. Who's the most prolific black quarterback in Notre Dame history?
Most prolific black quarterback in Notre Dame history.
Tony Rice,
probably.
I'm surprised none of us picked Rocket Ishmael for a receiver.
I'm gonna go with Jarius Jackson.
But
Jarius Jackson on that 1988 team.
You're talking about Tony Rice lost what, 3 games as a starter and won a national championship? Like,
I realize you're trying to be contrarian, and I get it, and I like it.
No. Jarius Jackson is my answer for a lot of questions because he's one of my favorites. He's one of my all time favorites.
He didn't ask favorite though.
He didn't ask favorite. He said best.
Well, in my mind. I'm living in my mind, not.
I mean, Malik Zaire never turned the ball over.
He did not, and he threw the most perfect game quarterback rating wise in Notre Dame history.
DeShone Kizer is the most mentioned quarterback in Notre Dame history that would have won a national championship had he come back another year.
That is factually correct.
I mean, Tony Rice won a national championship. It's hard not to mention him. I like Jarius Jackson a lot. Thought he was a hell of a quarterback. We'll go leave it at that. Oh, he put excluding Tony Rice.
Okay. I mean, I got a soft part in my heart for Jackson. I watched him as an undergrad. I mean, it just makes sense. I mean, like in terms of talent, maybe Kizer was better or.
Go back and watch some of the wins that Jackson had, some of those comeback wins he had. Fucking incredible. It was Oklahoma. Yeah, had one of the biggest ones, that USC that same year. It's a tough year for Notre Dame in 99, but they had two of the greatest comeback wins in program history in the one year, SC and Oklahoma.
Can I make an argument for Demetrius Jones?
No.
You could certainly try.
I was just wondering if I could.
Well, I mean, we can make an argument for anything. I can make an argument that that Yost wasn't a racist piece of shit, but I would still be wrong.
Yeah.
Well, all right. Thank you for that. Last review. God, these shows have been all reviews. This is good stuff. 5 stars from Bear Down Eli. A bone to pick. Hey, guys. Not sure why my last review didn't get through, but anyway, trying again. I'm a Notre Dame student, and I'm always jealous of other teams' abilities to fill their stadiums with 30,000-plus students as opposed to our 10. But you'd think we could at least fill the stadium with ND fans, right? I just overheard my dad, who's a season ticket holder, talking about selling his USC tickets to a Trojan fan for profit, then buying tickets at face value. Well, it makes sense, sort of. Didn't we used to have principals? I think this kid's about to get kicked out of his house.
I love this.
I tried to talk him out of it, but money seems to mean more to him than beating the piss out of Kalen Williams. Sigh. I know it's a sore subject with students and the OFD pod alike, so can't wait to relight this flame. Irish fans, keep your tickets. And this is all caps, bros. Irish fans, keep your tickets. Drink Trojan blood. Wear green. Not boring navy blue. Stand up, cheer. Don't listen to the usher telling you to sit down. He's 95 anyway. Go Irish, beat Trojans. I will say in that dad's defense, he's probably trying to figure out a way to pay for your fucking tuition.
Well, how about this? just don't take season tickets if you're not gonna use them for the best game, right?
Yeah, I would say that. I can see that.
There's no way you're going to make enough profit on the USC game to pay for your season tickets. Just no way.
No. Here's the other part, too, is and why Josh is sympathetic to it. I mean, the dad obviously is a Gen Xer, right? Just age-wise? So you'd line up with that, right?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, I don't know. Maybe he had – maybe this kid right here was – was a big surprise. Dad turned 50. Dad turned 50 and got mom. Maybe mom was a little younger and got her knocked up. You know, we don't know their situation here.
It's always tough to know a situation.
Look, I famously wrote an article about the Georgia game and selling your Georgia tickets. They got roasted pretty hard on 1 Foot Down. But I will say this. Selling your tickets for the USC game to a USC fan is not going to yield you enough profit to make you feel better about the fact that you just sold your tickets to USC fans. So if you're getting $50 off of the whole thing, then just, you know, eat the $50 and sell them to a Notre Dame fan.
I don't think he gets $30 for that.
Well, here's the thing, guys.
I mean, what's the current price of silver, and how much is 30 pieces of silver worth?
Well, look, I think we've had this,
right? You're Judas.
We're going to agree to disagree about, you know, at some point the cost becomes to the point where it makes no sense for you to hold on to your tickets or sell them to a fellow Notre Dame fan for at cost when you know that the market is way above that.
The important thing to hear to do is to not make this about math, because math is stupid and dumb, and we all know that.
It's all about emotions.
Math is dumb. Exactly. Now, so hear me out. What his dad is doing is not nearly as egregious, and here's why. We know the amount of USC fans that are going to show up at South Bend. We know the amount. It's not a lot. Whatever the number you think, it's not a lot. Don't worry about it. The problem Notre Dame has had in their stadium get took over has been by fan bases who don't normally come to South Bend.
Correct.
And have rabid fan bases. Georgia, they never got out of the fucking Southeast region. They were dying. They were dying to get a big game scheduled elsewhere. It made all the sense in the world. They came in droves. Nebraska, big time program that travels. Doesn't play Notre Dame a lot. These are two of the, like, the blue blood elite programs of the last 75 years, right? Like, they showed up because that was what they were. That's what they know. They have nothing else to do. Like, that was what they do. Cincinnati, they showed up. Why? Because they're 4 hours a fucking way, and they were playing for a playoff. Cincinnati's not a small school. It's a big school. You know, there's plenty of people that.
Big school, big alumni base equals big alumni base. Yeah,
exactly. So in this area too. So right. It wasn't like they were traveling from Tempe.
The more to the question at hand, you know, things will only improve when Notre Dame consistently fields a team and they don't a great team and they don't play the Middle Tennessee's or I'm sorry the whatever tennis East Tennessee State or whatever whoever we're playing this year. And Central Michigan's. Now, I understand that they need to do some of those games, but it's hard to say I'm going to get hype about, you know, this game instead of saying somebody else wants this ticket. I'm just going to, you know, grab a quick buck or whatever. And, you know, these 230 games against low energy teams with an aging alumni base equals a recipe for a very quiet stadium. And we've talked about this for years. And it's not going to get better until Notre Dame is such a tough ticket to get. And the only way that they're a tough ticket is if they play marquee games at home and they're a fantastic team.
Clemson.
And in playing the bottom of the barrel ACC team year in and year out is not going to get it done.
No.
And, listen, and you know and, what? I'm glad that the dad, I'm glad that the reviewer's dad said USC. And you didn't say the game where Notre Dame fans need to hold on to their fucking tickets.
And that's Ohio State.
That's the Ohio State game. You need to clasp those tickets like you need to put a death grip on them.
See, the dad has wisdom. The dad has years of wisdom behind him. He knows the amount of SC fans are going to show up in South Bend. He knows.
Well,
it doesn't change. It does not change drastically. There's not a huge...
They can't even sell out their own goddamn stadium when they're playing UCLA.
Now, if you want some recent history to like help us out here, everyone was worried about Clemson last year, right?
It's not a word.
Everybody was like petrified that we're going to have a sea of orange inside that stadium. It did not happen.
Did not happen.
I was not. I was less worried than most people.
I was worried.
I had kind of a, we had already been here regardless of the 2020 thing. It wasn't some novelty. It's a good fan base, but it's not Georgia, man. It's not Nebraska. It's not Ohio State. It's just not. It's not on that level. Look, of fandom.
I think the thing we could all agree on is if Dad is so hard up for $50 cash, he should jettison his season tickets as a whole instead of selling to USC fan, because there's no way.
Yeah, I'm definitely not USC advocating.
There's just not enough USC fans who are interested in that game to carry enough of a premium. So, I don't know what his seats look like. I don't know how many years he's had tickets or how many years tickets have been in his family or whatever, but suffice to say, Brendan in this case is right. It's not worth the 30 pieces of silver.
No,
I would be disagreeing if it was, you know, the Georgia 2019, was it 2019?
Well, they were shelling out a grand a ticket.
Or then, Nebraska, then, I mean, the fiscal, it was fiscally irresponsible not to sell your tickets. USC, you're not being fiscally
capitalism irresponsible. Still a thing.
Yeah. And the Notre Dame USC week, I guarantee fucking you, no one's gonna have a problem calling up and get a ticket. You're not gonna have a problem getting a ticket that game. If you want to go, you can go. I guarantee it.
Yeah, I just don't think Notre Dame. I think there's a better than good chance that one of those teams isn't that great, and therefore it's not going to be hard to get a ticket. So
which one?
I guess it will remain to be seen.
Hmm? Oh, Jude, you cagey bastard!
Oh, Jude, that's what I wanted. I wanted to hear who wasn't going to be good. I want to hear Jude say, "Listen, team secretly trash, fellas."
USC trash.
Hey, there's a reason why the last two podcasts we've been on, we've literally talked about nothing that's happening in the current Notre Dame football team. Literally nothing. I mean, do you want to talk about Marty Biagi's official announcement that he was
absolutely
hired?
Absolutely not. Absolutely
not. So let's talk about all the commitments that we've got during the pot of gold splash.
We don't have time for that.
Yeah.
No, the pot of gold thing was for guys that are for the 25 class. Which I don't give a shit. I went to the
DM. They need that. Get for them. They fill up your social media. I have no problem with that. Fill up your social media with cool stuff that Notre Dame's doing.
That is great. My only problem lately has been I've seen more stories about 25 guys than 24 guys. And that isn't just this last week. It's been like the last 2 months.
Listen.
And it's just like, are we not recruiting for the 24 class?
Listen.
Like, are we unsure about what's going on with 24? Because to me,
are we recruiting anyone?
Yeah. And I am not going to get overly critical about the recruiting process right now because I don't know what's going on behind the scenes. I know what's being told to people via recruiting reporters. And things aren't, I mean, there just isn't a whole lot of noise out there. Now, it's definitely not a good thing, but I'm not sure if it's a bad thing either. Like, So I don't know if it's that terrible to not have, you know, a flurry of like five or six commitments over the last couple of months or even two. But I mean, I'm okay with where they're at right now. I guess in theory, it's not a huge bother.
Well, you don't have to win mid-March, but at the same time, like it just doesn't feel like there's even neutral momentum.
Well, and we also know March doesn't matter, right?
What are you talking about? I'm thinking of all of the March wins that we had. What was Notre Dame's recruiting class ranked last March?
Probably
how many of the five stars in Notre Dame's last March recruiting class ended up in their class?
Right. So it gives us a great reason to just ignore the shit out of it this time around.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've been telling you guys for years to ignore recruiting, but you just won't do it.
No.
The five-star pod.
Dude. I know I don't email you the site stats every month, but if you did, you'd realize why recruiting gets talked about.
Yeah, no, I get it.
But I mean, yes, it's there is a bunch of I try not to put out pointless recruiting stories. Like I am definitely not putting, and I say pointless like for me to do it, not for like a Tom Loy or a Matt Freeman. But I am not regurgitating like so-and-so was offered or this person. Yeah. No, I don't give a shit about any of that. Some only, and as far as like visits go, like if you're a 5-star and you're playing an official visit, like we just had, okay, that's newsworthy. Because that means that guy's going to use one of his 5 visits that he gets for Notre Dame. Cool. Although we've also found out last cycle, no one gives a shit about official visits anymore. Someone's going to pay for that trip, and it ain't going to be the recruit one way or another.
Right.
I mean, I don't think Peyton Bowen's family was able to afford traveling all the fucking time. Just saying. But no, there is not a whole lot of news right now, and I honestly, that's fine, because that means there's not a whole lot of nonsense going on. The biggest news was that Brandon Hillman isn't coming to Notre Dame. Personal reasons. He personally disliked foreign languages, apparently. Allegedly.
Yeah.
Allegedly.
You know, if he could have put that Michigan commitment tweet in more than one language, he probably would have put that commitment tweet to Notre Dame.
So I took a – he got offered by USC, and he used a picture of Notre Dame USC from last year in it. And so I took a screenshot of it because I'm not going to quote tweet a recruit. And yeah, and I tweeted something out, and I normally don't delete a tweet after I tweet it out. Like, it is what it is. I ended up deleting it because it did look a little petty, but I did want to call it out. Like, that's a fucking troll. Look at me being a troll. You know what I mean? I can't get in Notre Dame because I didn't hold up my end of the bargain. So now I'm going to use this picture of Notre Dame getting beat by their biggest rival. I'm a fucking troll. So, but I deleted it because it was a bad look.
Because as Michael Jordan said, fuck them kids.
You deleted it because you're very professional.
We are very professional.
Well, we know that's not the case. We know that's definitely not the case. But yeah, so he goes up to Michigan. It is what they don't have a foreign language requirement, apparently. And that's fine. I really don't care. And I don't mind that Notre Dame has a foreign language requirement. I don't. But when a kid says he's going to do it and doesn't do it, that's on him, man. People are pissed at Notre Dame. Tell them that's a bad – it ain't a bad look for Notre Dame. Go ahead. I mean, it's a bad – put the story out there. The kid didn't hold up to his end of the bargain. It wasn't a grades issue. You don't have to say grades. He's not stupid. Although, I mean, using the correct form of two in a very public tweet probably would have helped. But, I mean, he decided he wasn't going to do the necessary work. He wasn't going to do the thing that was supposed to get him in, that he had probably already promised that he would. You don't accept a commitment from someone. It's on him. It's on him. And it's fine. That's his life. He's going up to Ann Arbor. He'll go do his thing. We'll see how his career pans out. It is what it is. But I'm not going to hang Marcus Freeman out to dry for it. I'm not going to hang Notre Dame out. I mean, I'll hang Notre Dame out to dry for lots of issues, lots of academic issues, too. But this one, I'm not going to. I mean, whatever. You told the kid you needed that. He said, okay. And allegedly. I'll break out some Letterkenny gifts for that one. Allegedly, he fucked an ostrich. So that was the biggest news, honestly.
Other than next week. Football's back, boys. Football's back.
No, you know what was the bigger than all that? It was Audric Quickfeet Estime.
Oh, dancing.
Tearing up a jig in Dublin.
That is very true, and it was very good.
There may not be a more likable player on the team than Audric Estime, honestly, guys.
When was the last time they had someone on the level of likability? It was Jerry Tillery, right?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, I mean, like
that's sort of the standard, like, of like somebody who just like virally became likable. Not, I mean, the play certainly.
I mean, it wasn't viral. There was a whole Showtime marketing campaign behind him.
I would have liked to have seen that marketing campaign when Golden Tate. Well, because yeah. I mean, he's got Golden's got plenty of personality.
Oodles of personality. And
Notre Dame didn't have any fucking idea what to do with and never did anything with. But you saw enough of it out in the field where you knew it was there. And then when he got to the NFL, there was it was all coming out.
It was right there. Yeah.
It was there the whole time. But yeah, Audra Gessamy might be one of the more likable players.
I think we enjoyed everyone on the Inside the Garage podcast, right? They seem pretty likable.
Yeah. No,
sort of. I mean, the Inside the Garage, like, not to disparage the Inside the Garage podcast, but the vibe I always got, it was like Kyle and Friends.
No, I kind of got the opposite.
So it was the Friends Kyle?
I don't know. I mean, I kind of thought on the podcast they were all on the same level. I mean, with everything that rather than on the field, where obviously Kyle Hamilton was just an absolute beast mode. But I think on the podcast, they were all on the same level, which was kind of nice. And some of the jiving back and forth, I enjoyed it. It was not, I think people were expecting it to be more than what it was.
Yes.
I think the assumption might have killed it for some people, but I appreciated it for what it ended up being, for sure.
When the first episode started with the Kyle Hamilton spit cup story, I thought, we got something special, a real inside look at what's going on. And I think after the spit cup story, that
got a lot less interesting. Yeah.
So you know how like every new series, like if it's on HBO or whatnot, like every new series, like the first episode of a brand new series is like half porn for 25% of the time, right?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because that's going to draw the viewers in. It's like, it's edgy. It's sexy. It's got all this. It draws you in. It's just like, you know, like Game of Thrones did that. Of course, they did that with like
Rome. The entire Rome first famously season. Did that too.
Rome really did that. And, God, I just rewatched Rome a short while ago.
It's a phenomenal show. They had a minuscule budget, and they still managed to – like if they would have had – if Rome would have came out today, we would have gotten these immaculate battle scenes. And in Rome, they were just like, a battle happened,
which actually I appreciate because I don't really care about –
I appreciated it too. I thought it was a better show because
– In those kind of storylines, I appreciate less – like that's why I like Last Kingdom better than Vikings because they kept the action – like the fighting sequences down a lot less. I mean, it was less, I don't know, man. There's less bullshit attached to it. And you get the story of it all. But I was also, when I watched Rome, I was surprised how I still have a massive crush on the redhead, whatever her name is. She was in Patriot Games too.
Ginger Spitzer.
No, it's not her name.
Oh, it could have been.
That's a pretty great name, though.
That is a great name. Anyways, yeah, I remember when that first came out, I thought, God, this woman is a nice. She should be on everything. And she was only like on a couple things. But anyways, she might have been the fat lady in the mirror in one of the Harry Potter movies, too, which blew me away. But the sound of my voice. At any rate. You got a flash of the pan grab to get these people on there. And that's kind of what Polly the Kyle Spit Cup story was. Polly, yes.
She was in Enchanted April, Patriot Games, Sliver. Oh, Sliver. Yeah. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Restoration, The Gambler, and Savage Messiah.
She's only 12 years older than me.
By the way, Josh, you're my age. This is totally off topic, but... did you guys pass around copies of Bound like we did at Notre Dame and talk about the quote unquote great cinematography?
No,
you know the Gina Gershon Jennifer Tilly movie Bound.
Nope.
Yeah.
Nope.
Like you got to watch this great cinematography.
For us, the movie that got passed around was Kids.
Oh God!
No.
And anytime I've watched that movie twice in my life, and each time I felt worse.
The kid on the skateboard, right?
Just God, yeah, it's such a.
What was it? Don't worry, Jenny. It's me, Casper. Ugh.
Yeah, Kids is like.
That's rough. That's
you just feel like humanity has no hope. It's so bad. But that was a big one that got, I remember being in school. But I mean,
for us, ours was Matt Feebles as the passer.
Well, I mean, back then too, that was when Pulp Fiction first came out. That was a big one that we were watching.
What was the movie that was always playing on in the background that nobody was watching, but it always seemed to be turned on? And for us, it was Austin Powers.
Dazed and Confused.
Blow.
Yeah. Blow. Interesting.
Oh.
It's interesting.
Yeah, Austin Powers, that came out like my freshman year, I think, the first one.
Yeah, 97, I think it came out. And it just seemed to be the one that everyone
to a friend and then
a copy of. And it just like when you didn't know what to put on, you were having people over and you knew that you needed some sound for the room so that it wasn't like a dead vibe. You just
Mall
put
rats.
It on, but you never expect anyone to watch it. Mallrats is another one, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, Mallrats. Yeah, there's several.
I'd probably be the dork watching it. So
yeah. It definitely is stupid. So anyways, so wherever we're at, there isn't a whole lot of news, and that's fine. We got camp coming up. Luckily for us too, there's not going to be a whole lot of media access. Very little. It's good. It's not good for sports writers because they just flip out and get all pissed off about it. I don't mind it because it keeps us away. I don't mind it as much because it keeps us away from making a whole lot of bullshit out of nothing. Like spring, I don't need to get in another rant about spring football, but spring has just got so many bullshit storylines that absolutely have nothing to do with the fall. And I don't feel like wasting my fucking time with it anymore. Like it's just nonsense. It was like when Chris Stewart moved to nose tackle for spring, who cares? You know, like all the moving around of Avery Davis for like two springs. Who cares? I mean, it's just nothing ever.
The Max Redfield drama, the Kevin Austin lighting up the, you know, the offseason drama, right?
You know, and I hate using the term Junior Jabby Award anymore, and I refuse to use it. But I will say Junior Jabby. I mean, kind of like that kind of stuff just floats around. Now you'll have some good stuff, and I think. For a lot of the beat writers,
I mean, Corey Holmes running the fastest 40 among the wide receivers
and getting Jude all hot
and
bothered.
And I did the same exact thing with Tobias Merriweather, who I still am not going to give up on. I still am going to be on Tobias Merriweather in 2023. So,
and see, that's what bothers me about spring too, is because what year is Tobias Merriweather going into, Jude?
I believe junior, right?
Sophomore.
Oh. Yeah, that's right.
To be a sophomore. And the way that fans, the media isn't as guilty as fans are of this, but certainly there's just a tendency of like almost writing a guy off. Like after their freshman year, if they didn't like perform to their level, or I don't even know. It's like you have those guys, and then you have the guys that are like, that they'll hype out of nothing. Like there's absolutely no production and absolutely nothing to base it off of, but you think that he's going to, it's just all these assumptions made out of bullshit.
It's like how we spent all this time waiting for Braden Lindsay, right? It's like UHND has this Now or Never series where it's just like, it's always guys that you say, that guy should have broken out by now. And then you're just like, well, this is the year. And it never is the year. It's rarely ever the year, right?
Yeah, you're right. It rarely ever is the year. Sometimes guys are just what they are.
This is the Tim O'Malley theory, where like the guy who they think is going to break out the previous spring is probably going to break out that the next year.
Right? They did that about
this is the guy who's going to break out this year, and then,
so this is a good for Toby then, right?
Well, yeah, and like Riley Mills.
Well, I'll guarantee you this: he'll have more catches.
Yeah.
Than he did. What did he have? One.
You think he'll have more than one?
I think so.
But will he have more touchdowns than he did last year?
I don't know. That's a good question.
Maybe you should make that a profit.
Will he have more touchdowns? Is that the Javon McKinley line?
The Javon McKinley.
Pretty damn close. You
see the Javon McKinley line, like basically almost get 1,000 yards, but not, but. but not get the touchdowns to go with it.
Oh, right. You know what else was another one of those spring storylines that never came to fruition? Cole Kmet throwing a pass because he was a baseball player, right?
Yeah. Now that's the legacy of Mitchell Evans. Now
that was Avery Davis throwing a pass too, right?
We saw that,
right?
And Brendan and I got that right in our faces. I'm excited for spring though in a funny way. Like I'm ready for some changes. I'm ready for something different. And at least, you know, I'm not gonna try to knock Reese here, but at least we're gonna get some fucking fresh shit going on. Something different is gonna go on this year, and it starts this spring.
Thing is too, I don't think, you know, in previous years, not nor so recently, but we've had on the women's side for sure, but on the men's side we've had basketball to distract us, right? We got to watch.
Don't have that distraction now.
Right. And now we're down to the women's team and they're injury riddled and they're going to play a Maryland team that they've previously lost to when they're fully healthy and at home. And so this could very well end in a week. And I hope not. I'm rooting it like hell for them, but the men already, you know, they were already eliminated. They didn't even go. Right. And so
that we also had hockey tournament runs.
Right.
Hey, Brent, did you happen to see who made it in the NCAA tournament for hockey?
No, who made it?
So the cutoff line was 13 on the pairwise.
Yeah.
Which left out 15 Alaska and 16 Michigan State. So bravo. Notre Dame ended up 17th. If Notre Dame all they had to do was beat Michigan State in that series and they would be in. Because they'd probably be maybe 10th in the pairwise. But fucking, how do you pronounce that? Canisius? Yeah.
Isis. I think it's pronounced Isis.
So they're ranked 41. They beat Holy Cross in their conference championship game. Holy Cross was ranked 46. And because it's out of bid conferences, they're fucking in the tournament, which is just feels like a joke. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Bullshit. Anyways, but yeah, at least Michigan State didn't make the tournament. That was sweet justice, as far as I was concerned. Not justice, just thank fucking God. Notre Dame shit the bed against Sparty so bad this year. It's just Michigan gets a one seed, and Notre Dame just beat the piss out of them. So, and Ohio State and Penn State sitting there in the 8-9 spot. So.
It's just we're in a weird kind of thing where, you know, it's still early on baseball. Hockey didn't make it.
And they're not having a good year.
Didn't make it. Women's basketball is the end is coming sooner than later, you know. And
but that number one is lit up on Grace Hall though, Jude.
Oh yeah, that's right. Men's cross.
Perfect.
As they smoked Michigan.
Smoke Michigan and whoever was number two lost too.
Notre Dame was two.
Was number one lost. I can't remember. Anyways, doesn't matter. Notre Dame's gonna be number one. Business across. Line up Grace Hall, baby. News. Baseball.
The way that they're crushing teams and good teams. I mean, there's natty potential there, right? I'm no lacrosse expert.
Oh God, yeah. Oh yeah.
But I've been watching the men's lacrosse team.
That's Drew Brennan. And
that's natty potential.
Yeah. So I wanted to say this because I was the thought that I just remembered that I had the other day. The problem with Notre Dame baseball is the same problem Notre Dame hockey has right now. It's it's just boring. It is Notre Dame's hockey team was literally the biggest team in college hockey. They're just big bruisers. Their games were terribly low scoring. They had a great
goal. They had the best goalie. He was first team All American, right?
He was first team Big Ten. He just got. I'm not sure where the All American status lies, but he was one of the best in the country. Michelle was just. I mean, he was amazing. But Notre Dame's winning games 1-0, 2-1, I mean, that's their – see, it's just not very – especially for college hockey, it wasn't very exciting hockey. Not a whole lot of shots on goals. Notre Dame baseball right now, they cannot fucking hit worth a shit. They just cannot. So it is – and it's rough to start a whole – like your first 17 games are on the road. That's a rough way to start a season in any sport. So
walkability in the Midwest and playing spring sport, right? Why don't they make baseball in the fall?
That's a good question.
Because you're going to end up in cold weather one way or another. I mean, you're going to go out
because you don't want to play your postseason in the winter. That's right.
Yeah.
There it is.
It warms up. In other places, it warms up. And, you know,
I guess the better question is why don't you play it in the summer?
Yeah, you couldn't start in like August or something.
You couldn't start in like, I don't know, April.
And roll through July. I mean, I'm with that. I'm cool with that. Let the kids have the fall semester off. Maybe it'd be better. I mean, it's certainly would be better. It would be better for the Northern teams if that was the case. I mean, Notre Dame, Michigan, UConn.
Heaven forbid they do something in sports that's good for the Northern team.
Yeah.
Yeah, no shit. I mean, Central Michigan, which is that's a good baseball program. They could definitely use that. Yeah, they're fucking around. At any rate, I'm ready for some freshness this spring. I'm ready for Sam Hartman. I'm ready for the Sam Hartman experience to happen. I'm ready for accurate throws. I saw a picture of Drew Pine practicing spring football in Arizona.
How does that look?
Just chuckled, man. I think he looks bigger. Not taller, but he looked like his arm. He looked like he beefed up a little bit. But I'm just like the difference in what we're about to get than what we had might be the most extreme change at the quarterback position at Notre Dame that I could ever remember.
I mean, what was Demetrius Jones?
Yeah, to Jimmy Clausen.
You know, yeah, and that's the opposite way for sure.
Yeah, that's what I mean. That's like,
That's okay. That's actually perfect. This is the opposite of what Quinn the Demetrius Jones was for sure.
I like Demetrius Jones catching strays.
I mean,
I did not walk into this podcast thinking he'd be mentioned twice, but here we are.
Here we are.
Just Google Subway Domer Demetrius Jones conversation. You can read the little interaction I had with him in the stadium during a football game that he chose not to play in.
Oh, yeah, how'd that go? Michigan,
right?
Michigan State. He opted not to get on the bus to go to Michigan. And then during the Michigan State game, he just showed up next to me, used my phone. So I had Alex Flanagan's phone number, which was awesome. For a hot minute, talking all sorts of shit about Charlie Weiss, asked me if he should hit Charlie Weiss in his fat fucking head. With whatever he had in his hands. He says, how much you would have bet I hit Charlie Weiss in his fat fucking head with this? And I wanted to be like, I didn't think you could were that accurate, Chief, but you know, that was interesting. But yeah, this is a huge change. The level of quarterback play we're about to get this year is going to be way, way different. And look, I have no idea I'm not going to bullshit you. I don't know how good of a quarterback coach Gino Gadulli really is.
Gadulli.
Oh, Pompadour Primavera. Right. Yeah. Got it.
Pompadour.
I forgot her. I forgot we got the Taste of Italy on the roster.
Right.
But
we got the Florence Chicken special teams.
Of all of Notre Dame's problems last year, the wide receiver position, I do eventually think that things got figured out as the season went on.
Yeah.
And now I think we're sitting, I won't say you can't say there's an embarrassment of riches, but I think there's a lot of talent to be used, plus the new additions. There might be some use out of one of the three freshmen that showed up early. I think there's a lot to go off. I love right now that there's two Caleb Smiths. One's a graduate senior. The other one's going to be a freshman. And if you are cool like me, you are using the terminology Caleb Smith the elder and Caleb Smith the junior.
I love it.
But I mean, I'm just kind of excited to see how that all works.
Are they spelled the same?
Oh yeah.
Oh nice.
They're both K's. I mean, I'm excited to see what happens with the running back room. I have no idea where Jadarian Price is at with his rehab. Hopefully he's, I doubt we'll see him in the spring. But I mean, I put it in an article just a couple days ago, like with Brandon Hillman deciding that he wasn't going to speak Spanish or German or French or Italian or Lithuanian, you know, that still leaves 8 spots that need to be freed up by summer. And yes, as soon as you mention that, you get a, oh, it'll, don't worry about it. I'm not worried about them getting 85. That's not the point. The point is, which of those 8 are bouncing that are on this roster right now? Like, that's the more, that's the interesting part. And I, in the past, I've tried not to talk about, say names because it's, well, it's a little disrespectful.
A little rude, yeah. A little rude.
I mean, it is. But also, I think there's also reality to it that you have to talk about it because how can you not?
Right.
There are 8 players on this roster that are not going to be here at least come fall. So I firmly believe, like, come Wednesday when we have the press conference and they hand out, you know, you get the official spring roster, you'll probably see 4 guys not on there. Right. This guy's on the roster. Like, that'll be handled. Then it comes down to, like, so let's say half the guys that you need gone are going to be gone just for whatever reason that day. Then you'll have the other 4, and that's just at the minimum. I mean, that's just the minimum of guys you need to get down to 85. That's not saying that that's the only, it could be 10, 11 guys, who knows? Because as spring goes on, even though we don't get to see a whole lot, and the spring game is really isn't an accurate portrait of where the team's at, those guys know. They know their pecking order going out of spring and into fall camp and the likelihood of them earning playing time or earning a starting job. So guys like Rocco Spindler, you know, maybe in the spring, if he looks like he's getting buried, that's a guy that could bounce. But there's also, like, there's other senior offensive linemen or other offensive linemen with veterans. Tosh Baker is one.
It's also just a reminder that anything that you read from beat reporters who don't get to personally witness anything but talk to exclusively to coaches about how practice went is just propaganda.
Well, yeah, it's whatever storyline the coaches want to spin. So right. Take it for what
The coaches could literally tell you anything, and if you don't see it, then you have no way to independently verify it.
And so we joked in the DMs, right? Like,
you repeating it is just being a propaganda arm of the university.
There is one full practice that has allowed to be viewed this year. One. And we joked to the DMs that we guarantee there's like a 220 play scrimmage the practice before.
Yeah.
So, which they did in the fall.
I was going to say, in the one that they see is 2 hours of stretching, right? In a drill in which Marcus Freeman brings in a soccer ball and has him do goal line shit.
Yeah, if you want an accurate depiction of what the season might look like from spring, you are just setting yourself up to be fooled. And the beat writers will all tell you this too. They're not trying to sell you something else. They know it. They say it too. But all we can write is what's put in front of our plate. Now, how you frame it is definitely one thing. Maybe some will embellish or really buy into what they're being told because some coach or some player won a press conference.
The problem is that Notre Dame knows it doesn't give a shit whether it gets coverage during the spring or not because they know it's irrelevant. So it's not like all the beat writers could just say, you're not giving us access, we're not writing about it, and be unified front, because that's exactly what Notre Dame wants. They'd be like, great, you're not going to write about our team? Perfect.
because then that Ohio State doesn't know what kind of plays we're running or what formations we're looking at or, you know, how the new install is going on anything. Right.
And look, they complain about it less because they get a ton of interviews.
Well, like,
and there wasn't much more access to under Kelly, but there was less interviews.
If you complain, what changes? Nothing. You just sound like a complainer.
Right. Right. Yeah.
Unless everybody complains.
Notre Dame has all the leverage here. No, even if everyone complains, Notre Dame's they're immune to it. It's not a right. It's not an enshrined right for the media to view practice.
No.
That's true.
Nope. And honestly, I mean, I know the beat doesn't feel this way, but you don't need to see all that practice to cover the team properly.
I would say some instances it ends up causing you to create biases that are actually harmful for you in terms of your coverage.
Well, especially when you're not like if you were able to be at practice.
There's nothing more dangerous than falling in love with a player during the spring, coming from a person who's literally fallen in love with several players during the spring.
See, the only way to be accurate about it is if you saw every second of every practice.
Right.
But if you're giving half and half coverage or a quarter of coverage or whatever it is, your opinions are based on a whole lot of assumptions. And they all know this. Everybody knows this. It's fine. But just like, don't bank on it. Like, unless there's just something that is just so transcendent that you can't get over. Like, say you see a guy just like they're in a full on sprint and you see a guy just pull away. He's looking like he's got rocket speed. Then at least you have that. And even then it's like, okay, he's a track star. Braden Lindsey could do some of that. So how's this translate to the field?
Right. Pete Sampson tells you a story about like the first time he saw Justin Tuck and he was like, oh, this guy is not going to be anything. Right. And just, you know, it happens. Guys make great first impressions and the guys make lousy first impressions. And if that's the only time you see them and that one thing, then that's what you think for the remainder of the year, especially if the guy's not getting on the field. Right.
Yeah. It's just a whole lot of,
I mean, I don't think anyone would argue Justin Tuck was not a transformational player, right?
No, he is him and DeShone Kizer. You talked about DeShone Kizer. Notre Dame was in the national championship
back. Coming back.
In 2017. If Justin Tuck played in 2005, maybe Notre Dame was a national championship. And I used to be a big one, like they go play Texas, but they lose to Texas. I don't know, because USC didn't have anybody like Justin Tuck. Chasing down Vince Young. You know what I'm saying?
You think Justin Tuck could have caught Vince Young before he got to the edge?
He would have fucking murdered him. Fucking murdered him.
But maybe we're not in that situation. Although I would have to say that Brady Quinn's performance in big games was always lacking. So
except for SC in 05.
Your hand the number of big games Brady Quinn played in, though.
Right. I mean, you can't count how many he won. I mean, SC was probably his defining moment. And again, a loss.
Yeah.
So
because he didn't play in a lot of big games.
Yeah. I mean, Sugar Bowl of the USC games in 05 and 06.
Michigan 06.
Right.
Michigan 06. Train wreck. I mean, at the time, 05 Michigan was a big
05
game, right?
Michigan was huge.
But how did he play?
But I'll tell you what, that was all Charlie Weiss.
Yeah.
Before, but Charlie Weiss's play calling at that point was still on elite level and people weren't figuring it out because what Notre Dame did in Ann Arbor that day was just methodical, like absolutely methodical. So, Corey Mays knocked the shit out of Mike Hart. So that helped. I was the only guy in the crowd.
Brady Quinn threw for 140 yards in that game against Michigan.
Yeah.
It was a 17-10 game.
That was a Darius.
That was Darius Walker. Yeah, back to back years.
They drove it enough to play field position. They did. It was if you were a fan of either of those two teams, it would have been a boring ass game to watch. But live and in person, the shit was intense. I mean, it was intense every moment. It was one of the better play calling games from Weiss that I saw. Just the way that he managed a win out of that one.
What was your favorite second half score that Notre Dame had in that game?
They didn't, did they?
They kicked a field goal in the fourth quarter.
Okay.
Yay.
Yeah.
Well, you sat on a win. It was very especially that period of the NFL. It was very NFL like, right? Not anymore.
We're putting lipstick on a pig by saying NFL like. They're like, it was an ugly win, and I'll take it. But I don't know.
Well, it certainly wasn't. There were no. Michigan was ranked 3 at the time.
Yeah,
they certainly didn't end up being a top 5 anywhere team by the end of the season.
Yeah,
no. They were a year.
But it was fun. But it was fun going up there and beating them.
Yeah, back to back years beating Michigan. That's a feat.
That was huge. And then 06 happened, and Mario Manningham really stuck it to us.
Yeah.
And then 07 happened.
Yep.
And John
and
Sullivan
then 9,
decided.
9, 10, and 11 happened.
13. John Sullivan decided, you know what? Our freshman quarterback should just go ahead and get sacked by 9 guys at one time. Anyways. So I keep moving this thing towards. I'm excited to see kind of how the offense figures itself out. And I keep forgetting about the defense, honestly. Like, they need to find some guys on the defensive line. They need to do something. Like, there's veterans that need to step up, and there's new guys that need to come through, but they need to generate a pass rush this season without using a fucking safety blitz. And I'm not sure that's there. That's definitely something. How do you witness that during the spring? You're not going to see a whole lot of, you know, a whole lot of things that are going to give you hope. But again, not seeing every second of every practice. If you did, maybe there is, or maybe there's more to spare. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm also very interested in the difference in special teams. I think we were graced with so much excitement where special teams was very much in play in a way that it never had been during the Brian Kelly era. And with Brian Mason's departure, it'll be interesting to see if that kind of goes back to sort of the same old, or we can kind of capture that lightning in a bottle with Marty Biagi.
Yeah, I don't know. You think back like the Clemson game, like how it all got started. Does that game roll like that without that? I mean, Notre Dame pretty much manhandled the shit out of them up front. So it'd be stupid to say like, oh no, this game goes a whole different direction, but it still could have. I mean, it's just big time special team plays are such.
They're such deflators.
Yeah. It's just, it's huge. And a play like that where it's a score. So that's a touchdown.
Yeah.
I don't know. They got a whole lot of new pieces in the staff.
It's so funny that, you know, it was sort of like Stockholm syndrome. We had Brian Polian and we were just like, thank you, sir. May I have another, you know, and then Brian Mason came along. And we're just like, oh wow. We can actually do shit. That's more than just, waving our hands above our heads and
just checking the boxes.
Well,
it's also it's also because like the number one thing talked about special teams for whatever reason is just returns. And in this day and age, like a kick return and a punt return, those are things that they're becoming less and less common. They're not happening near as much as it used to. So that isn't like the big indicator.
Well, I don't know if it's for whatever reason. I mean, they're trying to legislate them out of the game.
Sure.
Well, absolutely. True. But they haven't got to that. They haven't got to the NFL level on that just yet. But I mean,
or the XFL level.
Well, they've pushed up the way that there's less incentive to fair catch it because they pull it out and there's just less incentive to and teams are analytics are really on the point now where analytics say just fair catch it.
Yeah. Yeah. Just get the ball in the 25 and let's go.
It's a rare condition this day and age to see any.
But that's why like having a team that's out there blocking fucking 7-8 punts in a season, why that's such a huge deal. is because if you're taking out the big plays on kick return and on punt return, like as a return, blocking is still there. You know, you ain't legislating blocking out of it, right?
One question though I do have about that and like the Brian Mason effect as well is that like it's sort of like Phil Steele's
returning production.
Yeah, not returning production, but turnover luck.
Oh yeah.
I think that some of that obviously is you know you make that, but a lot of that like there's no way they're blocking that many punts this year, right?
No, even if Brian Mason was back in Notre Dame this year.
Yeah, that's what I meant. Is even if he was back, they're not returning.
You could you could set the over under at like 5 block punts, and I would take the under.
Because Foskey's gone, or because just
I think that could be a big part of it. Yeah,
yeah. I mean,
you just said two very rational reasons why, Jude.
Yeah.
Because one of your best players on the punt block team is gone, and there is no hiding what teams are going to be preparing for. That's a big part of what Notre Dame did last year. If the same thing was coming back this year, they'd be getting ready for that shit. A little more than what they did last year. So, yeah. But I don't know. We'll see. Marty Biagi, of all the hires that Notre Dame had in the offseason, I think he was probably the one that people are more with than even Parker. So, we'll see. That's a whole lot of newness on the staff this year. For a staff that we assumed back in October was all returning, right?
Well, I think Reese would be the biggest question mark, but sure, yeah.
Well, I think there was a point last year where we thought Reese was definitely gone, and then I think shortly after that, we were all pretty sold that he was coming back. There was a point last year where I think we all agreed that
this was Reese's last year. Way, but maybe I did. I don't know.
Oh. Yeah, definitely in the offseason talked about it, that he could perform his way into a better job. And I don't think that he performed his way into a better job. I just think he got a better job.
Yeah, I think he's living off hype right now.
Well, I don't like saying that.
Okay.
I didn't like Mike Golic when he said it either.
No, I think Mike Golic believes the hype. I think that's the difference here.
Well,
I think Mike Golic believes that Tommy Reese is worth the price of admission, whereas I'm saying it's all smoke and mirrors.
Right. I am not. We start talking about better jobs.
Touching grass? Oh.
Well, when he starts like the Alabama offensive coordinator job, so much better. And that may be true. If I was an alum, especially if I was an alum and a former player, I just don't know if I'd be publicly just saying that constantly. Because an offensive coordinator at a big time program is what you make it. And Reese fucked his own shit up.
Honestly, if you didn't say it though, you wouldn't be considered very serious, right?
I just don't know if I would say it one way or another. I would just keep it out of the. I would just keep that part out of the conversation.
Yeah, but some things are better left unsaid.
Right. That's what I was just saying. Like. I don't know. I wouldn't be selling that point if I was Mike Golic Jr. I'm certainly not selling that point as Joshua Voles, Emperor Supreme, Warlord. I mean, just not. Fuck that shit. Fuck Alabama. I mean, it's just. I don't know.
You cannot be defender of the faith if you're selling that. By the way,
if this was fucking Kevin Rogers, you could say that. But this is goddamn Tommy Reese. And look, I don't. Tommy can go do what he wants to fucking do. I don't. It is what it is. Honestly, I don't care. It is what it is. But just the whole point of just burying Notre Dame like they were a fucking MAC team. The narrative that former players are making basically is that, yeah, we are a stepping stone program. Well, how about we not sell that, gentlemen?
As the offensive coordinator, you recruit so that you're not a stepping stone program because your job was to recruit. So maybe do that, huh?
Maybe somebody other than Drew Pine deserved an offer that year. I don't know. But yeah, I just don't think banging the drum to say that we're a stepping stone program is is something that they should be doing. Like, there's other talking points to be had there. It's fine. And if you can't figure them out and talk about it, then what the fuck are you doing talking? Touch grass. Anyways. I don't know. This has been a very boring off season, which is not a terrible thing for the fall. Just, you know, don't worry, guys. Everyone that's complaining about no news, don't worry. There's going to be like two ACLs and Achilles. Don't you guys worry. There's going to be plenty of news you're not going to want to hear over the next couple of months. Maybe your favorite player as a recruit decides as a junior he's going to transfer somewhere else at the end of spring.
No, we're going to get the practice footage of Sam Hartman throwing absolute dimes, and we're going to be ecstatic, right?
To Rico Flores. I've been trying to figure out who the narrative is this year, and it's hard. Like, the wide receivers are definitely, I think, the ones that are the top candidates. Because I think we all know, I think we have a pretty good idea what we have in Estime and Diggs, right?
Yeah.
And if there's any help from...
Well, there's some...
Any help from...
Price. But...
And then, you know, we know what we have at the running back position. We're pretty confident. Wide receiver, we all believe that we... Going into spring, it might be underrated by some others in the country. Like, there's a lot of potential there, basically.
Sure.
But I think that first clip of...
But spring is going to be the time for them to make that potential, turn that potential into pure hype for somebody. Like, just pick a wide receiver out of the bag, and he's got the potential for getting a shitload of hype just because of the way spring went. Like, maybe it's Lorenzo Styles. Maybe all you do is see him catching every tough pass thrown his way. And you're like, oh, you fixed his hands problem.
That'd be awesome.
That would be awesome. I would like to see that. I don't know. Maybe we'll see Mitchell Evans throw like a 50-yard bomb to Estime running a wheel route. If we see that, I'll do a 3-hour podcast on that play alone.
With Jack Fowler, special guest.
Special guest, yeah. Maybe we'll bring back some old ones for that one. So I don't know. You guys got anything else you want to bring up? It's thin, slim goings, boys. Slick thin.
So Paul Mawala got engaged. Mike McGlinchey signed with the Broncos. Julian Love signed with the Seahawks. Chad Bowden, the recruiting coordinator, got engaged, and the Instagram caption was, "She committed." Of course.
Quality. Man knows his job.
Congrats.
Drew
Tranquil to the Chiefs. Yep. I knew I was missing one. Thanks, Brendan.
Solid move for Drew.
Yeah,
that'll forever be.
Was that a 2-year, $12 million deal, Brendan? Do you remember?
One year. It's a 1-year deal. I believe so. I believe it was just a 1-year deal.
Which is it's an alpha play. You're betting on yourself.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, Drew Tranquil's an alpha guy.
If he can stay healthy.
Jews been doubting him for years.
Oh.
For years, Jews been doubting him.
For years. And Julian Love, too. Julian Love got doubted.
All right. Well, we need to do a rank everything, so I'm going to do something simple here. Boys, give me your top 5 pastas.
Wait. Pasta type of noodle?
Give me your top 5 pasta dishes.
Oh, okay. All right, who wants to start it?
I have no idea.
I'm going to pull rank and go last.
All right. Do you want to go first, Jude?
No, go.
No, Brandon, go.
Boy. I mean, top five pasta dishes, huh?
I like anything with bacon and peas and cream sauce.
You like a good carbonara. A good carbonara. I like the one what is it called? We've been having a lot during Lent. What's it called? It's basically Italian macaroni, or not Italian macaroni, Italian mac and cheese. It's Josh, go first. Let me think about it. I got to
put it together. All right. I got a top five just kind of off the top of my head here. So number one, which is just probably crushes most, is lasagna. And the lasagna's got to be a good fucking lasagna. That's some bullshit lasagna.
Yeah, not some vegan shit or something like that, right?
Yeah, regular ass lasagna. And also, I'm not talking about your ground beef bullshit that you're using. This needs to be the triple blend beef, veal, pork.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I mean, how do you make a meatball? The Holy Trinity, right? Don't be fucking around with just I'm going to go to Myers and buy me a pound of ground beef and make some lasagna. No. That's some bullshit. So that's number one. Number two actually is some bullshit. But when we were growing up, my dad did not cook a lot. My mom was cooked all the time. There was rare examples where my dad actually cooked. He did a pretty mean stir fry. One of the things that him and my mom would cook together, they'd have a contest basically, was who made the best spaghetti pie.
Oh, so, really?
Yeah. I don't know why. And dad would use, he would use ricotta. Mom would use cottage cheese. She's fucking German. So what does she know? Cottage
cheese for real?
My wife is a big one. She gets pissed. She wants me to use cottage cheese when I make lasagna instead of ricotta.
What?
That's how she grew up.
No kidding.
Yeah, people would use cottage cheese. Now you can make it work for sure. You got to beat it a little longer. You can make it work, but it's definitely not the same as ricotta. I thought they're both still good, but it's just a fun. That was just more of a sentimental dish than anything else. I like a good fettuccine Alfredo, but I am very picky about the Alfredo sauce.
Yeah.
Like very, very fucking picky about the Alfredo sauce.
And sometimes Alfredo sauce does numbers on my stomach. So it's always like it's always a gamble when I eat the Alfredo. It's like, oh, is this going to taste good and feel bad later? Or is this just going to taste good? Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And kind of like, it's very, very much the same. Kind of like spaghetti pie and lasagna are very much on the same level, but along with the fettuccine Alfredo, they're just like a garlic parm pasta. Is a dish that I make a lot, that everybody in the house just absolutely crushes. In fact, I gotta make a double batch most times. And it's just too easy. It's a one pot kind of thing. Not very authentic, but definitely pretty fucking delicious. So I'll back that 100%. And that one, I mean, fettuccine is definitely the go-to on that one, but you can use penne. I don't recommend any angel hair or anything like that. That kind of gums up. So that would be four. Oh, and then five. Isn't an Italian dish at all, but you guys will not be surprised when I tell you what it is. Munchies Emporium over in Fort Wayne, Mad Anthony's Brewing Company, back when it was called Munchies over on Maple Crust. First had this. This is when I first came across Old Bay seasoning. There's a dish they had called Chesapeake Bay Shrimp, and it was shrimp on fettuccine, and it was the sauce was just a like a butter like a garlic butter sauce, but like with a shit ton of Old Bay seasoning. It was fucking fire. It was so good. I couldn't get enough of it. I make it every once in a while at home. It's good. Shout out to Alex, who was the chef back then. He really did a number with that one. Loved it. And that was really my introduction to Old Bay seasoning. As like a 20-year-old.
So. I love it.
All right, I got mine.
Yeah.
All right. So Cacio Pepe is the one I was thinking of.
Talk about the tiny
Cacio Pepe's up there.
The ones for soups?
What? No, Cacio Pepe. It's basically just noodles and cheese.
Yes.
Arrabbiata's up there for me too, because it's the spicy one. I can't get enough arrabbiata. Pasta puttanesca, because I love olives, so obviously puttanesca is there for me as well. I like gnocchi with sage butter. Does that count? That's a pasta dish, right?
No, you can't count gnocchi.
Right, so gnocchi doesn't.
I would have had at least two different gnocchi dishes on my list then.
All right, so pasta, that's on there as well. That counts, right? I can do pasta.
Yeah,
that counts. Yeah,
A good bouillonese, that's there for me too. We make a really good one, and I guess if I can't do the sage butter. I already got the arrabbiata. Then I guess just a lasagna then. So I got the cacio pepe, puttanesca, bouillies, the pasto, and lasagna, lasagna.
Hey, you guys will like this. So growing up, like I don't know why I didn't put, I had a sentimental one on here. I don't know why I didn't have grandma's on there, but like, the big thing at grandma's on Sundays was mozzarella meatballs. Growing up, we had that all the time. The meatballs are as big as your fist. They're the best meatballs that you'll ever have in your life. Mozzarella was fire. But I would probably have a cup of mozzarella and like eight fist-sized meatballs. In high school, my grandmother was insistent that she was going to make the team meal before a game. Like we always had, team meals and the mothers usually put it there. So she wanted to do a meal for one of the games. So of course, what does she do? She does mozzarella meatballs because it just feeds, right? Problem is that her meatballs are so fire, you will shit. You will fart for 3 days at least, right?
So, give the whole team runs.
Dude, no. Well,
but not the good runs. Not the offensive runs you put on the board.
We had red pants, so it was probably hard to tell if someone actually did. But no bullshit. Out in the huddle, if you did not hear a couple of farts every fucking huddle, and that's just standing around, let alone like every time you exerted yourself, you're shitting yourself. It was just the entire game. We won the game. I'm pretty sure. Yeah, that was senior day, my senior year. Dude, it was intense. Like the amount of methane, that was like a cow pasture that we were out on. That's how much gas was getting passed from that. But that mozzarella meatballs is just fucking fire. And it's a secret. She won't tell anybody the exact way she makes it. Now you could be in that kitchen long enough to get a good sense of what she's doing. And I've done that in the past, but it just never seems to come out the same. And I don't know what else she's doing to it besides
using putting MSG.
Well, no, she's using that fucking, the Sicilian voodoo, which is real. The weird Sicilian magic that you got on it. I don't know if she puts the evil eye on the meatballs or what she does, but it was hot fire. And her mother, my great grandmother, she always had like this Italian wedding soup. Like any time of day you walk into that house, that soup was simmering on the stove. God, the whole house smelled like it all the time because it was always simmering. Just fucking phenomenal. I wish I had that now. I'm so jealous of fucking 7-year-old me. It's ridiculous. Jude, you got – did that spark some –
Yeah, I just have a couple to add. I mean, obviously, some of the ones that you said would be overlap, but Bertolli makes this like a meals at home sort of thing that we actually tried once and then just basically did ourselves, which was a shrimp, penne, asparagus. I think it's like a – to be honest with you, I think it's like a vodka sauce.
I know the one. Good.
Yeah.
Another one. Yep. That's pretty good.
We do a lot of shrimp and garlic with like angel hair spaghetti. There's something to be said about exactly like you said, mom's meatballs. Like my mother, if she makes meatballs, I want them. I'll take them frozen. I'll reheat them. Like it just so – they're just so like – they just feel like home, right? And so –
the best.
Same thing with lasagna. Like it just, that's why I kind of was like blanching at the idea of cottage cheese. Cause it's like, it was always just made with ricotta. You know,
as it should be,
I'll have to ask my mom about the three different meats, because for meatloaf, we definitely did it that way. I'm not sure if we did it for lasagna that way, but maybe we did, because I can't imagine it just being ground beef. It tasted better than just ground beef. So,
I mean, a lot of people got away from veal over the years, but I'm still a big believer in eating veal.
Yeah.
And at least my heritage will allow me to do that. You Polacks can't do that shit. But I still eat a lot of veal if I can get a hold of it. It's harder nowadays. Yeah.
And I mentioned the carbonara, anything with, you know, peas and bacon. And, I love that too. So.
Now I'm fucking starving. I'm about to gain 8. Fellas, I've lost weight. Well, I've lost me probably like 15 pounds over the last 3 weeks. So I'm about to put that probably on after we record here because I'm so hungry now. That's ready to go. All right. Well, we did the thing. We got past the 2-hour mark for the first ever earned 5-star podcast. No cheers from the crowd there. Yeah. So I think some of the support for everyone to know, like number one, as Tim Priester likes to say, people win in the, win the press conference. We always win the off season. Our podcasts are much better than everybody else's because it's much more fun. But I think the fact of the last 3 or 4 episodes has been a whole lot of nothing has kind of caught us off, kind of caught us by surprise a little bit. Like we'll schedule up a podcast and like just naturally assume there'll be some things coming up that we could talk about, and there hasn't been. So we haven't really like set like a, you know, like when we do like a villains podcast, which by the way, what are we on now, Brendan? Like part 5?
Part 5, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. There will be a villains part 5 in the off season. That's tradition. So just bear with us a little bit, I guess. I know this show definitely goes out of bounds a few times every episode. But there is more stuff to come. But there's anything going on, which again, it's not the worst thing in the world to not have news out there, as many of you will attest to if you just remember some of the shit we've gone through over the last 5, 6, 10 years.
5, 6 weeks.
Yeah. So even though the names change, the networks change, we're still going to put this up on the website.
It's still in your feed. That's a good thing too. That's a huge... You don't have to go searching for it.
Yeah. You'll have, when you get this episode, you'll probably have the generic FFSN logo on it. Brendan whipped one up while we were talking. That'll be up as the pod art, but it'll also be the logo moving forward until we change our mind. Cause now we're allowed to like do all sorts of things. So who knows? Who knows what we got going on in the future? This could have been an Olive Garden logo.
I thought about
it. Has Brendan tried?
He was trying to steal all the intellectual property at once.
We could have, you know, you could have made it
Mickey
like
Mickey Mouse ears on the logo. Yeah,
that's right. It's a Winnie the Pooh Easter egg.
You could have had the Golden Goat.
I could use Winnie the Pooh if I wanted. I could put Winnie the Pooh all over our podcast if I want to.
Well, yeah, it's
I could have, now, the whole podcast. Yeah, it's free to use now.
Well, yeah, you could have the Golden Dome, put the Olive Garden logo over the doors of the main building. Put Mickey Mouse ears on the Golden Dome.
Got country novels.
Yeah, we could just really
country family
pimp this ride. Something like that. All right. Well, that's it. So appreciate you listening. Remember, get on over to Apple Podcasts. Leave that rating. Leave a review. Any review that you read, you leave. We will read word for word on the next episode. Again, be a part of the show. It's a 70-30 thing. I don't even know if that's right because math isn't real. But
it's a social construct. Just like
it's not real. It's all in your fucking head. Numbers are fake.
Love is better than Patrick Mahomes.
He is.
It's as legitimate as me caring about your bracket.
Which, oh, there's only one of us on this podcast that actually filled out a bracket this year.
That's me.
Whoops.
Nope. This is the first year since I was
I'm the commissioner of a bracket that has like 90 people in it, and I didn't even fill out a bracket.
Oh my God, that's even better, Jude.
Yeah. I kept meaning to, but just never got to it.
I helped fund my prom one year by running a bracket.
Nice.
Yeah, it was like a $10 buy-in. I was skimming like a dollar or two off the top. Known. Well known. But the... I mean... Yeah, my heritage works out every once in a while, you know, like it just seemed normal to me. Like, I'm not doing this shit for free, y'all. You want to win $400 or what? All right, well, let's get the hell out of here. Thanks for listening. And as always, go Irish.